Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hyperthetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hyperthetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hyperthetical, Hyperthetical.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Dungeon Cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Will.
This is the podcast where we talk about everything Dungeons & Dragons, from the Mage Manshoon to the Master Mariners. And today we're talking about Mechanus.
Prepare yourselves.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Will.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing pretty good.
Excellent.
Okay. Nice. Feeling very organized, orderly, and lawful today.
Most worthy.
And because of that, we're going to talk about Mechanus, the lawful, neutral, aligned plane of existence of the outer planes.
Nice.
So Mechanus, originally known as Nirvana, actually, is one of the major 16 outer planes in Dungeons & Dragons. It is a plane attuned exclusively to the alignment of law, and thus is a place of ultimate law and order itself. It is a place from where all premeditated plans are born, where all rules and laws that permeate the fabric of the cosmos originate. And some say it is the very gearworks upon which the universe itself rests.
Gearworks, I see.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a lot about gears today.
Oh, God.
It is also a place of neutrality. We've talked a lot about the outer planes at this point, mostly a lot of the eviler ones. Mm-hmm. And most of the outer planes have a very tangible effect of good or evil upon its denizens and the behavior of the plane itself. The plane almost acts either good or evil.
Oh, okay.
Well, Mechanus exudes an incredibly powerful effect of neutrality upon its inhabitants.
Oh, I see.
And its own behavior, yeah.
Yeah, okay, sweet. So Switzerland up in there.
I guess so, yeah. This neutrality is usually expressed as this perfect and unshakable balance between all things. Mm. So kind of the opposite of, it is the opposite of limbo, which is the chaotic neutral realm where everything's in flux and nothing's ever balanced ever.
Yes.
It's the complete opposite of
that's
that.
That's where the Gith live, right?
That's where the Gith Zerai live, yeah.
The monk Gith.
Exactly. Mm. And they use their minds to make everything very lawful, despite living in chaos. So, Mechanus is where perfectly regimented order reigns supreme. It consists equally of measures of light and darkness, equal portions of heat and cold, and equal measures of all four elements. Mm. It is as predictable as a drip of a water clock and as obvious as a train of field. There is a place for everything, and everything is in its place. Even individuals living here exist only to fit into the greater scheme of things, and thus achieve a perfectly balanced society.
Oh, cool.
There is no pain or suffering in Mechanus, but at the same time, the only pleasure to be found here is the successful filling of a role like a gear in a machine. Notions such as passion, fantasy, and illusion do not exist here, except for what visitors to the plane may bring with them. But any who try to promote individualism or stir passions for a cause, they'll soon find that they're very not welcome in this place.
Okay, their version of Netflix is just like super bland.
I guess
like
so, yeah.
Nothing controversial to
exactly,
watch.
Nothing controversial. Okay. Nothing but documentaries, just dry documentaries.
Okay.
You're right. So any questions before we keep moving on?
So like the physical nature of this place, like when I go to this uh-huh. plane of existence, are we going to talk about like that experience?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, let's talk about like what is the plane of Mechanus. So the plane itself is an infinite void extending in all directions and filled with an infinite number of circular interlocking gears, anywhere from the size of islands to the size of continents.
Okay.
Now these gears all have teeth that mesh together at right angles, all turning slowly in perfect synchronicity. The cogs are said to be engaged in a calculation so vast and complex that no single deity in all the cosmos can fathom its purpose.
Okay. It's like,
like, what's this machine doing? I don't know.
Baphomet has like a whole wall that's just a chalkboard of like calculations about the Mechanus gears and like how to utilize them. He's like, I can't figure it out.
Right. Exactly.
I'm going to make an animal.
Right. Okay. So regardless of this, though, each disc does have one obvious and apparent purpose in that they are the ground upon which all denizens of Mechanus dwell. So this is the land upon which people live.
Just on these.
They live on the gears. There's nothing but gears.
So you're you're having dinner, but you're just like in an endless like rotation.
Yeah. So the discs are rotating.
It reminds me of Elemental Plane of Air in a way that it's like this infinite expanse with like these floating islands.
Right. Yeah. I definitely. That's
hard clouds.
Hard clouds. Yeah. Hard clouds.
Okay. These are just really hard clouds, and they don't take sides.
No, never. So
unlike those other filthy side taking clouds.
The discs of Mechanus, also known as cogs, are composed of stone, earth, and metal ores, as if a deity had carved them from the mantle of the material plane.
Okay.
Each disc has its own gravitational pull that operates in a sphere circumscribing the cog exactly and pulling with standard material plane strength to both the top and bottom surfaces.
So these could be floating at like various different angles all over the place. Yeah. But whether when you go to the specific disc, you will stand as if it were normal
exactly.
Gravity.
And that's the thing. You're going to have cogs that are like at right angles like this, and like you'll have gravity here, but if you manage to get close enough to jump onto the other one, gravity will change.
Oh man. Yeah. I know somebody told me like what the art piece was where the people like walking through the infinite stairs.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's kind of like that.
I forgot what even episode we referenced that. It wasn't that long ago though.
Might have been Far Realm. I feel like it was a Far Realm.
It could have been the Far Realm. This is the lawful neutral Far Realm.
Sure. Yeah. We'll go with that. Sure. So the void between gears is filled with air, allowing for easy flight. Okay. So where there's no gravity, you could still breathe, and I guess you could just fly. You could fly if you can fly. If you can't fly, I guess you're just floating there. Because
you can fly if you can fly. Yeah, man, that's how that works.
You know what I mean? God,
well, are you saying like maybe you could just squirrel suit it up in here? That's what I was thinking.
Well, sure, I'm sure you could. What I'm trying to say is, in a lot of the outer planes, one can move through void with thought. Don't think you could do that here in Mechanus. The laws are too strong.
You have to squirrel suit, but you can't feel like a certain type of way about it. You have to be really, it's got to be a really like narrow, bland experience.
Right. Sure.
Can't get excited about anything.
Outside of a gravity sphere, objects only feel a very weak attraction to nearby disks. So you'll get there eventually.
Okay.
With the size discrepancy between continent-sized and island-sized cogs, not all cogs turn at equal speeds. Smaller cogs seem to turn at almost dizzying paces, while the continent-sized cogs turn at imperceptibly slow paces.
Sure. Okay. That tracks.
Regardless of a cog's speed, though, inhabitants will feel no centrifugal force once they enter the gravitational pull of said cog.
Okay.
So
it's like their own little demi planes.
Yeah, kind of. Almost. Except for you can see them from each other too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But once you're on it, it's like this is the cog.
Exactly.
The other cogs don't matter.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah. Absolutely.
I wonder, does that, so if they're at these right angles and you can like walk between them, that force is not really having an effect like on one to the other. Like they're not going to pull each other together or whatever. You know what I mean?
Suppose not. Obviously not, because the machine is still working.
Right. So that would be a shitty way to go if you're on like a tiny disc and it
mechanics
just like
folds is collapsing in on itself. Yeah, that would suck. The objective directional gravity also means that inhabitants won't be spun off the edge of a cog unless they're standing within like 10 feet of the rim or so, in which case that sucks. Like, sorry, man.
Bummer.
Shouldn't have got so close.
I hope you got your squirrel suit on.
I hope you were on one of the really slow cogs and not one of the fast ones. So.
Oh, man.
The gear faces are normally devoid of vegetation and natural wildlife, although colonists from other planes, including the Material Plane, the Nine Hells, Celestia, have transformed many faces into like elaborate hedge mazes, parks, nature reserves.
Oh, wow.
Hellscapes if you're a devil, because you don't like those other things. But
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They put their touch on it.
So despite all the neutrality, you can just like come here and do those types of things?
As long as it's lawful and it doesn't break any of the rules of the major race, which we're about to talk about.
So like a demon prince wouldn't be here.
No, they're way too chaotic. So they definitely would not be welcome. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, okay.
And demon princes have been here, and we're going to talk about that later.
Ooh.
Yeah. So let's talk about the inhabitants of Mechanus.
Okay.
Unlike many of the other outer planes, Mechanus has only one single species that's native to itself.
Okay.
The Modrons.
Modrons.
So we haven't really almost ever talked about Modrons on the show, but Modrons are a race of immortals known for their zealous adherence to the principles of law and order above all else.
Okay.
They are beings of absolute law that adhere to a very hive-like hierarchy. A Modron's appearance is very varied, and it depends on their position within Modron society. So generally speaking, a Modron's appearance is that of a clockwork machine, and whose body is that of a geometrical shape, such as like a sphere, a cube, a polyhedron, and essentially the amount of sides as well as like the complexity of the structure of a Modron determines their position in society.
Ooh.
So the more complex and the more sides you have, the higher you are.
Beast mode.
Yeah.
So there's more data involved in your construction.
Right. Sure.
Therefore,
exactly.
You have more capacity for
right.
law. So what these guys just like summoning people from like other planes that have like disobeyed order to like try them.
I could see that. I couldn't find any lore that strictly says that, but I kind of really like that idea.
That sounds like it's more actually, like a plot hook.
There's
right?
a lot of mystery to what it is the fucking Modrons do. Which okay. we'll talk about in a little bit.
Okay, I'll bring up my idea then.
Right. So again, the more sides a Modron has, or the more complex the structure is, the higher they are ranked. The highest ranked Modrons are more humanoid in appearance.
Okay.
There's actually kind of two caste systems to the Modron. So you have like the lower caste, I can't remember what it's called.
Circles.
Well, yeah. You have sphere at the bottom, and then like it's like triangle, cube, so on. Like it goes up to like dodecahedron or some shit.
Sure.
And then you get into the second caste, which are like the higher Modrons. They're not even called Modrons anymore. I can't remember what they're called off the top of my head, but they're the more humanoid looking ones. And they're okay. like the generals and the officials
sure.
and whatnot. And it goes all the way up to, well, we'll talk about it in a bit.
They're just the meme, the big brain meme where like the cosmic energies yes, are pouring into the skull.
Exactly.
Okay.
So Modron culture is pretty simple. Each Modron obeys all commands given to it by any Modron one rank higher than themselves. These commands are obeyed without question. And Modrons are actually only aware of Modrons of their own rank, one rank higher or one rank lower than they are. They're not aware of other Modrons outside that.
Wow.
And they never interact so with Modrons
to,
outside
you
that.
You have to
yeah.
bureaucratic go down the chain.
Exactly.
So Square is just real pissed off at like Pentagon all the time.
It's guess,
like,
yes, not, exactly.
It's like, man, that guy's...
Pentagon, you mean Pentagram? No, not Pentagram. No, it is Pentagon. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, Pentagon.
Too much D&D.
I've got a kid at home, man.
Yeah.
They oh, know
yeah.
shapes.
You know your shapes.
I know my shapes again.
Yeah.
Then triangle is just like, shit rolls downhill, man.
Shit rolls downhill. That's just
triangle's
the way it is.
Very mad.
So thus, Modrons only communicate with other Modrons of their own rank or ranks immediately above or below them. Modrons more than one rank away from each other are too advanced or too simple to even understand each other.
Oh, wow.
And that makes me think they like speak in like code, like computer code.
And there's like data loss going down
yeah,
the chain
I guess
of
so.
What can be received.
There's an incompatibility or something going on.
Okay.
Where was I? So, oh yeah. Furthermore, Modrons have little sense of self beyond what is necessary to fulfill their duties. They exist as a unified collective divided by ranks, yet they always refer to themselves collectively. So to a Modron, there is no I. There's only like we and us.
As represented by like a cog in the machine, like the gears.
Right.
Everything is working in tandem to create the
to
space.
Be a greater thing. Yeah, exactly. Okay. And let's take a short rest.
Okay.
All right.
Hey folks, I'm here today to tell you about Visible. Something unfortunate about wireless services, what you see isn't always what you get. But with Visible, what you see is what you get. No perception check required. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. If you're looking for a carrier that is upfront with no hidden fees, then go to Visible.com to make the switch. You don't need more than one line of wireless to save, and you're going to be getting unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Visible is the wireless carrier that's constantly operating from a zone of truth. In their quest for total transparency, Visible wants you to know the monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is great. They're taking businesses of all sizes, cradling them in their arms, to help them grow by giving them the tools they need. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success at every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/dungeoncast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/dungeoncast now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/dungeoncast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the part of the episode we're not talking about that last thing. We're talking about people we love. It's you. Love you.
I also love you.
Thank you, Will. Unprompted, you said it. That's fucking amazing. It's true. It's going to be a great short
making
rest.
Progress.
Making progress. Will's love and his expression of his emotions. It's really shining through. We have some special Patreon people to thank. Harley Criswell.
Thank you, Harley.
Leon J. Mosley.
Thank you, Leon.
Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
Jeff LaFay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Brian's Extra Thick with three C's. Demogorgon waifu, shout out to Demogorgon. Thank you to this person. That's not your name. That's just that's a sentence you made me
indeed,
say.
Indeed, it is. Thank you, though.
Thank you, though. It's exciting to read. Brendan Honeycutt.
Thank you, Brendan.
Terrence Madlangbian.
Thank you, Terrence.
I tried.
You did your best.
The Ultimate Human.
Thank you, Ultimate Human.
Twisted Tentacle In.
Thank you, Twisted Tentacle In.
Anthony Cardinale.
Thank you, Anthony.
Old Man Yeti.
Thank you, Old Man Yeti.
Philip Kiss.
Thank you, Philip.
Perhaps it's Felipe.
Thank you, Felipe.
Or Philippe.
Or Philippe.
Don't know. I do care, but I don't know. So that's a big pull of people. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
Don't forget that if you're a patron, you get bonus content. Don't forget about that.
There's a lot of it.
There's a lot of it. A lot more than I realized when I was looking through it the other day, and a lot more coming, and it's a concerning amount.
Is it really?
Well, not for me. I'm like, wow, well, we're doing a lot of stuff on there.
Yeah,
we have a monthly podcast. I think we're going to call it the Dungeon Chats.
Yeah, that works for me.
It was previously Episode X, where we talk about everything not Dungeons & Dragons, but also Dungeons & Dragons, yeah. But not in the context of like the format we do on this show. It's a completely different show. You can get to know me and Will a little bit. There's also the early episodes. You get them like 1 to 2 weeks early most of the time if I'm on my game, if I'm on my A. And then you can send messages in the show. We're starting to read messages at the end. So Patreon people, if you're listening, please send me messages. Basically, the way it's going to work now is I'm just going to read it if I like it, if it's appropriate for the show, whether you specify or not. So if you don't want it read on the show, say that in your message. You are now subject to our law. let's see. Is there anything else? Hit up our social media about contest.
Indeed. Yeah, we're giving away a copy of the newest D&D book coming out. I believe it's March 17th. I don't have it pulled up right now, but it's the new Critical Role
campaign setting. Yeah, the Matt Mercer special.
Right, exactly.
Flipping down some hash browns on you.
Indeed.
Matt Mercer style.
Yes. And so if you guys are interested in winning that book, all you have to do is share an episode of our show on social media, whether that be on Twitter with the hashtag DungeonCast or anywhere else, and just send us a snapshot and we'll go ahead and add you to the list. And we'll be pulling a winner on the day of release. So enter now.
Yeah, I'm going to make an Instagram post when I feel like it. Didn't feel like it, so I didn't do it.
You know what I feel like?
Getting back to the show.
Indeed. Hey, Brian.
We've returned.
Indeed, we have. And last we left off, we were talking about the Modrons and Modron Society and how they are like this unified hive mind that has no concept of self-identity.
Just like everybody at the DMV.
Indeed. So there is, of course, one exception to this rule.
Sorry if you work at the DMV.
Indeed, sorry. All Modrons are aware of and serve the godlike ruler of all Mechanus, Primus, the One and the Prime.
Metatron's cube.
Indeed.
It's just the most complicated of shapes.
Exactly. Okay. Well, Primus is considered to be a greater deity, but only so long as he remains in Mechanus, outside of which he does not have these same powers. But he's depicted as a singular android-like humanoid that dwells in a pool of water at Mechanus's center.
Shoot. That's cool.
It's pretty cool.
I was thinking about the Vitruvian Man. The one where he's got his arms out.
I like that idea.
And a circle around him. I was like, ooh, that's complicated. He's a man body with double arms and shapes.
That's an interesting take. I like it.
That's the next rank down. Sorry.
Of course. So his power over the Modrons is absolute. All Modrons obey the orders of Primus and carry out his plans. Under the direction of their leader, Modrons increase order in the multiverse in accordance with laws beyond the comprehension of mortal minds. Primus is completely immune to magic, and he can use telepathic commands to all and any Modrons on Mechanus.
Oh, okay. So he can supersede the law of like having to go down the chain.
Exactly.
Cool. I was going to say like
Modrons aren't aware of Modrons like outside of their little bubble, mm-hmm. but all Modrons are aware of and obey zealously Primus.
Okay. That's super cool.
Right.
So it's really the shape below Primus that has like the most issues trying to get Circle to move. 2D Circle is get 2D Circle out of that spot. That's not for 2D Circle.
So there's four beings underneath Primus. They're called the Secunduses.
So them, yeah. So yeah, that's who I've been referencing.
They're a Secundus, and there's four of them, which we'll get into in just a second here, actually. So despite Primus's greater deity status, he can, and as a matter of fact, has died before.
Oh.
During one of his hunts for his infamous wand, Orcus, the demon prince of undeath, came to Mechanus.
Oh, wow.
This was back when Orcus was like, I think he was no longer a god, but he had died and now he's back and he's looking for his wand.
It's complicated.
We talked about it in the Orcus episode. Go check that out.
Yeah.
So
you should go check that out.
Yeah, using the power of the last word, Orcus slew the god of the Modrons, Primus. To add insult to injury, when Orcus came to Mechanus, he did so through a portal pool in the major city of Regulus. Orcus's time that he spent in the city of Regulus corrupted many of the Modrons there, including the Secundus that was in charge of the city.
Shoot.
Yes. So in Modron society, there are four Secunduses who answer directly to Primus. Essentially, they are the high generals of Modron society.
Okay.
In the event that a Primus is destroyed, the four Secunduses come together to promote a new Primus from among their number. Unfortunately, in this case, the corrupted Secundus vetoed every vote of the other three and then openly rebelled and marched his million corrupted Modrons out of Mechanus to settle a colony in the infernal battlefield of Acheron.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is lawful evil, lawful neutral place.
So just some place. Modrons there?
Yeah, just a straight colony of evil Modrons. So this dealt a devastating blow to Modron society.
Yeah, just cut their numbers by like a quarter, I guess.
Not quite a quarter, but probably somewhere between
like the 20% range.
A fifth.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know.
20%. 20% is a fifth.
I got it.
Okay.
Nailed it.
So most editions agree that Modrons are the sole native beings to the planet Mechanus. But there is, of course, discrepancies in the canon. There is another major species that, depending on your source book, is either the actual ruling population on Mechanus or, at the very least, an invasive species on the plane.
Oh, what?
Yes. These beings are called Formians, not to be confused with the type of giant known as Fomorians.
Oh, geez. Okay.
I did not know what Formians were. But I was well aware what Fomorians were, and so this was a very confusing research paper for me.
It is a year of the big guy.
It is year of the big guy, too.
Shout out to the big guy.
Indeed. So Formians are an ant-like race of outsiders that are depicted as humanoidish giant ants, anywhere from 3 feet in length to 10 feet in length, depending on the rank the individual Formian was born into.
Okay, so they've got a ranking system.
They're like
also.
Ant centaurs.
There's a lot of analog leaderboards in Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, there's so many. There's so goddamn
get
many.
The internet, Dungeons and Dragons. Jeez, make everything so much simpler. Yeah.
Formian society is dedicated to spreading their colonies wherever they can. Colonies, also called hive cities, consist of a ruling queen and different hierarchies of workers, like from worker to taskmaster, from warrior to mermarks. Formorians have a hive mind based on the queen of the hive.
Okay.
So she controls everything.
Okay.
Any Formian within 50 miles of a queen can communicate telepathically with any other Formian within that range.
Cool.
So they can all communicate all at once. Yeah. The most prestigious of mermarks are responsible for guarding the queen.
Nice.
So expansionist Formians have hives throughout Mechanus. These ant-like centaurs seek to colonize all they see and incorporate all living things into their hives as workers, serving the law of their queens. So in a These are vicious. These are like vicious ant monsters, but they're still like super lawful.
Okay.
I just find it really interesting, you know, and they're on the lawful plane of existence, and it's just really cool.
So what are they doing? Are they just like burrowing into gear discs and
forming hives? Oh, yeah, geez. That's exactly what they're doing.
Watch out for those, like, you know how they make those big piles of dirt when they're carving their shit out? It's like a big pile of metal shavings.
Exactly. Just
like spinning. Right. Very ominously. Well,
the gears themselves are made of earth and stone, too. They're not just metal. Yeah.
For some reason, you probably said that, and I just pictured metal.
Right, and I did say that. You did picture metal.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's earth and stone. So it's
and metal.
So just like dirt, like regular dirt.
Exactly. There. It's just like it was carved from the mantle of the material plane, which is what I said in my first paragraph.
Yes. It's hard to... it's hard sometimes.
I understand. I do. The Formians build fabulous hive cities on both faces of a cog they colonize. Each colonized hive cog holds thousands of workers, warriors, and taskmasters, as well as several dozen or more mermarks. However, each cog only has one queen, whose commands are absolute law on the hive cog. Other queens rule other cogs, but usually two queens cooperate with each other. So, like, even though they're kind of separate, like, city-states, they will cooperate with each other unless each wishes to colonize the same cog, in which case the law of the Formians demands warfare. Oh. If a queen chooses to colonize a cog by sending a contingent guarding a precious queen larva, she is not swayed if other creatures already reside there. It's like, no, this is ours now.
Okay.
Yeah. After all, what are warriors for if not to make a cog ready for Formian colonization?
These fools are like your side quest when you come to Mechanus.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you landed on Formian one, you got to fight your way out.
Yeah, or like one of these, what are they called? The generals?
Modrons? Secundus?
The Secundus guys are just like, you got to fix the... You got to be the Orkin man right now. And fix
You got to be the Terminix.
There's two queens over there. They're not digging it. You got to go work it out. I don't care how.
Yeah, just do it.
Just make sure you obey the fucking law.
Right. That would be an interesting campaign. I would dig that. Above all, Formians on Mechanus is a Formian being known as the Scion Queen Mother.
Sure.
She's the Mega Queen.
Okay.
She rules over her species from a 3,000-mile-wide hive cog known simply as the Center. Not much is known about the Scion Queen Mother, but it is said she claims the power of an intermediate deity, which is really impressive because that's about Lolth power.
Ooh.
Who is an intermediate deity. So.
Lolth. I've heard people say Lolth.
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 Yeah.
Okay. Unlike most of the other outer planes, travel in Mechanus or into Mechanus is fairly easy to achieve. And we know trying to get a portal to the abyss is super hard. Not so hard with Mechanus. So there are natural freestanding portals from elsewhere that can be found throughout the plane and usually connect at the center of any given cog.
Okay.
There are portals that connect Mechanus to other realms throughout the cosmos, like other outer planes, inner planes, or even the astral plane or the ethereal plane, which the astral plane and the ethereal plane are much easier to get to than the outer plane. So if you get one of those, you can get to Mechanus really easy, as long as you know where a portal is.
What is the reason for the portals? Is there one? Is there just
there's
just
not around? Really one given. It's just
is that
they're
some
here.
Sort of reflection on lawfulness in some way.
I think that's the idea.
I don't know how that relates.
Yeah, I feel what you're saying, but I do think that's the idea. So, a portal Mechanus will appear regularly once per revolution of the cog it resides upon.
Interesting.
So, though some portals appear according, there are also portals that will appear according to the interaction of several cogs put together. So, this is part of the machine. The machine is opening these portals for some reason, and it's doing it at regular intervals.
Okay. I wonder, is there some sort of balance thing? It's balancing to have, connecting to all the other plane portals?
Maybe. And Primus does send the Modrons out into the cosmos to, invoke law, so maybe that's part of it.
This is a time for my campaign idea where you basically just tell your players that we're going to run a murder hobo game, build murder hobo characters to do murder hobo things, and they start murder hoboing, and then the Modrons come to teach them lawfulness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's the campaign. The big shift is they got to go live in Modron land.
Right.
And the Modrons are land. Trying really hard to make them into lawful, upstanding citizens.
But it's not working.
And then, yeah.
That's interesting. That's fun.
They'll probably get punished hard. That'd be a funny one.
Yeah, I think that would be pretty
also,
funny.
Also, it might be a slap in the face to your murder hobo players that you told to murder hobo.
Right. Very misleading. So once a portal appears, it will remain open for at least 1 hour and even as possibly as long as 24 hours. The reason for the ease of passage to Mechanus is due to this extremely lawful and predictable appearance of portals. That's why it's so easy to get here. No crazy rituals or secret knowledge necessary to get to Mechanus.
Wow. Okay. Just timing.
Just timing and a little bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
So like many of the Outer Planes, Mechanus has a profound effect on the mortals that visit this extremely orderly and mechanical plane. The 5e Dungeon Master's Guide provides two optional rules that you can implement to give your campaign that feel of pervasive neutrality.
Okay.
So the first one is optional rule called Law of Averages. While on Mechanus, creatures always use the average damage result for attacks and spells rather than rolling. So, for example, an attack that normally deals 1d10 plus 5 damage always deals 10 damage on Mechanus.
Wow, okay. Like,
yeah, it's just...
Very interesting.
Everything's neutral. Always average, always in the middle.
The chaoticness of your d20 is meaningless.
Yeah, there is no chance here. There is only precision.
Well, there would be. You still have to like roll attacks.
Yeah, of course. So you don't average
on that.
No.
Misses and hits are still subject to the chaos of the die.
True.
Okay.
The other rule is called imposing order. So at the end of each long rest taken on this plane, a visitor that isn't lawful neutral must make a DC 10 wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, the creature's alignment changes to lawful neutral. The creature's alignment reverts to normal after one day spent on a plane other than Mechanus, or casting the dispel evil and good spell will also restore its original alignment. Now, this is just a fun roleplay one.
Wait. Dispel evil and good restores the original alignment. It wipes the neutral.
I guess so.
I guess it's just they couldn't. That's a long name for a spell.
Yeah. dispel evil, good, and neutrality. Good.
Well, the effect of that's very abyss like. That ability. Well, no, a lot of the planes have like this. They impose this. This kind of nature change on the people that are there.
Exactly.
It's just like the energy. Yeah. This fucking vibe checking this Mechanus and it's vibe checking you back.
Exactly. Okay, it's very true. So this is a fun roleplay one where it's like, well, lawful neutral, what does that mean? Like exactly, it's up for the player to kind of interpret what that means to them. And like, that's fun to explore, I think.
Yeah. I think I would need to like research like what Dungeons & Dragons means to be neutral a little more, like to get this right. You
know what I mean? Like, well, that's the point is there is no right. Like there's a million ways to be lawful neutral.
Yeah, I guess that's why it's hard. I'm trying to like wrap like, my brain
look
right
at
now.
Like the Modrons and the Formians, like extremely different, both extremely lawful neutral.
Okay. So
that's what I like about it. I like that so much is left up to interpretation. I think that could be fun to explore.
Okay.
Any questions about Mechanus before we get ready for a long rest?
I don't know if I like this plane very much.
Yeah.
Like
I'm kind of
I like
lukewarm
the
on it too, which I think is fitting, quite frankly.
I like the Modrons a lot.
They're fun. Yeah.
I like the idea of the Modrons being like, you guys are too much chaos.
Yeah.
Like, you're the reason for blah, blah, blah. Like them coming to the party and be like, you're coming to Mechanus for trial.
Like they're the lawful police.
Yeah. Like we need to, you're tipping the scales and we need to bring everything back to balance. And I think that would be a cool like mid campaign story arc for a party to deal with.
I think Mechanus is definitely a place that like you wouldn't want a whole campaign to go to, but like maybe spend like a cool 7 or 8 sessions there and then get back to the real world.
I love the idea of a demon lord just like sitting next to like the place the portal's gonna pop up and just like dipping in there and be like, you guys suck, this place sucks, I'm bringing my vibes into this shit.
Oh, for sure,
and
I like, can see that, yeah.
Like, this is too lawful and I need it to be chaos.
Right,
and
right.
What a place for me to run amok of thing. It would be like a kid in a candy shop for a demon lord.
I can see that, but there's a lot of Modrons here and the Modrons are actually pretty powerful. But what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So we've like with the Blood War and just with the powers of good and evil, we talk about like the armies of good, the armies of evil, the demons and the devils. We never talk about the armies of neutrality, but they're there. They exist.
The armies that chill.
Yeah, exactly. The armies that would also probably join the fight of good if the Blood War ever ended, you know?
For sure.
Right.
So the leader of the spot, what was his name again?
Primus. The one in the prime.
The Primus died because... Mm-hmm. Orcus showed up and used his ruby rod to use the last word,
which if you remember from the Orcus episode,
that's
what
I was trying to remember.
The god killing magic word.
Right. But he got that taken away from him like later on.
Well, two things happened. The word itself killed him because he wasn't a god. So he couldn't hold on
to
the knowledge.
That's what it was. Yeah. Okay.
But also.
Oops.
Yeah. After he done killed a couple gods, the gods were like, this word's stupid. Let's just like not have the word. So they stopped the word from working.
They used the last word on the last word.
Exactly.
They like fired it into a word mirror and it imploded.
Yeah, sure. Let's get ready for our long rest. Okay. All right,
Will, man. I brushed my teeth. I got my PJs on.
We're setting up camp.
Setting up camp. Who's on first watch?
You.
No, I'm not. I'm going to bed.
Okay.
Where's Jake? Let's get special guest Jake to take first watch.
Right, right.
Okay, so we have some messages we want to read from patrons. We're going to start with you, Diggy. Yeah, if you know in our Discord, you know Diggy.
Yeah, that's true.
Hi, Will and Brian.
Hello.
Hey, Diggy. I promised I would stop doing that. I got to stop saying things in the middle of the message because they're not going to know which one is me and which one's Diggy.
Right, right.
All right, here I go. Again. No breaks until the end, as hard as that is for me. Here we go. Hi, Will and Brian. I have a dungeon mastering question for the both of you. Mm. Is there a non-5e D&D book, parentheses, from an older edition, end parentheses, or other book from another role-playing system altogether that you make a lot of use of when developing your current and past campaigns? Much love and respect from Canada. Diggy. Yeah.
Hockey. Okay, so other source books from other editions or other
so just a non D&D 5e book that you
use
as an inspiration. So it can be an older edition D&D book or just like I'm gonna talk about Powered by the Apocalypse, so you can talk about
Not really, is I guess my answer to this question. Like, I have a lot of 4e knowledge that is like bled over, but I'm not like referring to old books unless I'm doing research, which I do all the time.
You're just using your experience that's been logged in your brain from 4E. You're not and like cracking a 4E book.
Exactly. And I think the best example is I love to use the Dawn War Deity Pantheon. This is my favorite Pantheon, so I usually use that a lot. So
that totally counts.
So I guess no is the answer.
Sort of.
Kind of.
Sounds
maybe.
Like sort of
a little bit.
Yeah, maybe 10%. Here and there. Yeah, that's right. There we go.
Your
for,
turn.
For me, it's I actually pulled it up on Wikipedia, but there's a Friends at the Table arc called Marielda. It's like a prequel to their Hyron arc. It's probably their most popular thing. But it's called Blades in the Dark, Powered by the Apocalypse system. I pick up a lot of stuff from that campaign arc where they're like a party of like a little mini thieves guild kind of.
Right.
And they use this flashback system. Basically, in our Patreon game, Flashbang and the Surgeon, superhero game set in Waterdeep based off of Batman the Animated Series, just some context. I'm taking stuff from Blades in the Dark and dropping it in as mechanics in that game.
The
flashback mechanic has been so huge. It's like
a
way to solve the unsolvable where you think you're in a corner. You can just have a flashback and I've had a lockpick in my mouth all along.
Right,
like
right.
That's pretty cool. That sort of thing.
But that's a mechanic from a different system that you're using?
Yeah. Okay. I've kind of just reflavored it to fit the Dungeons & Dragons thing, but they do that. They have this mechanic called stress that they use. So if you accumulate enough stress, your character is supposed to like break.
Right.
You know,
well, D&D has a stress mechanic as well.
Yes. So there's just like set up a way. There's a lot of parallels to other systems when people are like, you shouldn't be using D&D for this type of game because this system exists. But they're all so interchangeable, you know?
Yeah. Like, use what you like. Yeah, if it works, who cares?
It's a style thing.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Like, D&D can handle it all. I'm sure there's nothing D&D can't handle, but, you know, it's okay if you want to use another system because the flavor is a little different. You want a little more salt, a little more basil, a little more thyme instead of the regular seasonings that you're getting. You're getting some Lowry's out of D&D. I don't know what you get. Anyway, let's read another question.
Okay, sounds good.
Thanks, Diggy. This one's from Magnus Rock. I'm not going to talk in between it. Hi, I just wanted to say that you guys are great. I was never really much of a podcast guy, but I work as an enforcement officer, and every 2 weeks I do a 12-hour overnight shifts. I drive around a lot for my work, and as I respond to calls in the city, I found you guys through Spotify just searching for stuff, and it has improved my night shifts tremendously. Your episodes on subjects I already know give me more background information and ways I can utilize it, and the ones that explain new concepts to me that I initially ignored made me consider using them and creating brand new ideas. Wow. Not to mention Super Quest Saga. That's been my drug for the last little bit, listening to it even on my day shifts. Your crew, Brian, Jake, and Josh, led by Will, is fucking awesome. Keep up the fantastic work. Thanks, Magnus.
Yeah, thank you. Magnus Rock. Thank you, Magnus Rock.
Magnus,
thank you so much for the kind words.
Rocks.
Indeed.
Okay.
Glad you're enjoying the shows.
Yeah, we really are. Thanks for the kind messages. We appreciate those. And this comes with a little bit of bittersweetness. It's a send-off of Marvin Goldhart. He's trying to get one in before his time with us ends. And that's totally cool, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, we get it. We really appreciate your support.
Thanks for all the support,
Marvin.
Yeah,
it's been really nice talking to you in Discord, which is what his message is about. So here we go. He addressed it to me because I typically answer these, but, hey, Brian, and presumably Will, want to try.
No, never Will.
Never
only
Will.
Brian.
Only Brian. He's the only one on the podcast. No, that's not true. Obviously. Hey, Brian, wanted to try and get one message in before my Patreon is up. Shout out to the Discord community. I may not be a frequent chatter, but I love the community, and you guys keep me going through the good and the bad. Much love, everyone.
Oh, Awesome. Thank you, Marvin.
Really nice.
And thank you to Discord, too. So thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you guys in the Discord. I know you have your hands full over there with all the people in there. There's over 1,000 people in our Discord now, and there's a little giveaway going on. So if you're not in our Discord, jump in there. It's really great. Be excellent.
Be excellent to each other, please.
Be excellent to each other and to everyone. We know that you have it in you. You're a listener of the show. It means you're excellent. So if you're participating in that community, be kind. The mods, word is law.
Much like a Modron. Yes. Much like a Secundus, if you will.
The Secundus in the Discord. In the
Discord, that is our Mechanus.
Yeah. So we have their back 100%.
Absolutely.
Absolutely trusted. So, yeah, just... You know, make life easy for everybody and be excellent. We've been having a really fun time chatting with everybody in the Discord, whether it's Super Quest Saga, just Dungeon Cast episodes. Well, that off topic is real fun to just pop in if you're bored, you know, just hang out with cool people pretty much. Yeah. But that's pretty much all we got, guys. All
right. Well, thank you again, Marvin. And I think here we're going to call it a game. So
let's call it a game.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.